The Chartered Insurance Institute has launched a consultation of its members on their relationship with the professional body and how it can support them. It puts forward proposals for the CII's learning and assessment and membership career journey and responds to the challenges which the CII says the advice profession faces, such as the increasing number of people trying to bring down the name of the financial advice profession. But coming after the disagreements early this year over the future of the Personal Finance Society, the consultation has raised concerns with some advisers about the future of the CII and the PFS and the relationship the two bodies have with each other. I'm Damien Fantato, digital editor of FT Advisor. And with me this week is Alistair Walker, a chartered financial planner at HNW and chairman of the PFS's financial planning practitioner panel, but he is here in a personal capacity. And we are going to discuss some of the things which concern him about the consultation and maybe some of the other aspects of the consultation as well. Hi, Alistair.
Morning, Damien. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you.
So the two main proposals within the consultation are the what the CII calls the chartered ethos and the professional map. And my understanding is that it's the professional map which is the source of some of your concerns, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's fair. There are layers to it. The professional map has challenges, I think, which are fairly sizable for the personal finance or financial services sector, and particularly the financial planning profession. The wider issue around the consultation, the timing, what mandate it gives the people who are going to be there when it's has been dealt with, those questions all need answering too, I think.
So the professional map, just to recap as briefly as possible, it consists of 8 areas of expertise, including, of course, financial planning, and then it lists 7 interpersonal and attitudinal behaviours, such as curiosity and drive to deliver and integrity, and then it's... These behaviours are supposed to be developed by transferable enablers, such as core knowledge and skills, data and technology, and ethical working. What specifically, my personal initial reaction was that it's all a bit, you'd have thought that this is all a bit self-evident. What would you be concerned about?
So the professional map feels like something born out of a large organization. It's the sort of thing that would get a sort of an HR department at a big multinational very excited, because it would allow them to put together a balanced scorecard to assess their employees on and these sorts of things. I did a bit of research about professional maps, found that the CIPD have something very similar, which is an HR professional body. Mm-hmm. with a similar concept behind it, and in a discipline like HR, which I can't profess to know very much about, I've got to admit, but it isn't immediately something that strikes me as something with a technical component, where there may be significantly disparate sub technical proficiencies and directions to go in. And so perhaps this sort of hierarchical development through makes sense. When looking at perhaps even with the general insurance sector, again, which I don't know an awful lot about, maybe that hierarchical movement through an organization makes sense. But certainly when applying it to a very technical, very regulated, but also very sort of people-centric profession, like financial planning, which is where my interest is, it just doesn't stack up as being a sensible way to measure people's abilities or strengths.
Mm. Personally, I don't know if this is a reflection on your firm at all, but sometimes when I speak to advisors, the impression I get is that financial advice firms tend to be quite flat in their corporate structure. Is that sort of the issue that you're particularly highlighting?
Yeah, I think so. You don't imagine a sort of a practitioner-led organization to have these sort of multiple tiers of management that structure seems to imply.
So I should say the CII has provided us with a statement. We did invite the CII onto this podcast, but they provided us with a statement which which I will be reading out at various courses over, points over the course of this podcast. And they said that to create the consultation's draft professional map, the CII engaged with leaders, practitioners, HR, and learning and development leaders from large corporates and SMEs to specifically understand the skills required to be effective and succeed, as well as the key behaviors identified by leaders and as characteristics of top talent. The CII was delighted to hold interviews with 21 representatives from the financial planning sector, followed by focus group input and validation from a cohort, including four PFS board members and another eight representatives from power planning and personal finance. So what sort of impact do you think that this map would have on financial planning if it was to sort of become reality, I suppose, if it was to go from consultation to reality?
I think, first of all, it's very hard to see how this maps against a qualification framework, especially because the qualification side of things for financial planning is fairly heavily regulated itself. You know, there are competency-based qualifications that have to be met to be able to be sort of certified and signed off as a financial planner or a financial advisor. So that's a big question. I also worry that it's just a distraction. There's a need to modernize the way that learning is delivered for the financial planning profession as it has moved to a profession and away from a sort of an industry and the sort of the background where, you know, you sort of had a load of sales training at the sales organization you worked at, and then you've got some technical skills and moved through that way. And my concern is this is just a big old piece of distraction from the core issue, which is that the financial planning qualifications on offer just aren't fit for purpose at the moment, and certainly not for the future, which is what this professes to provide.
Mm. One of the other proposals that they include in this consultation is the changes to the membership bands, or membership bands where you know they have proposed four membership bands based on typical roles. So band one is frontline staff and administrative, all the way up to band four, which is senior leaders and business owners. And they've mapped out that someone in band one might be a foundation member and someone in band four might be a chartered fellow. Is that a sort of a similar concern that you might have, that it feels like you're sort of, there's a very prescribed route up the profession and through a firm or company?
Exactly. And I just don't think that matches reality. You know, what we're dealing with is something much closer in alignment to the sort of chartered accountant routes through, where you may end up with a technical proficiency, which is significant. I mean, I know a number of highly competent power planners who are chartered fellows of the Personal Finance Society. What they aren't is senior business leaders in strategically important roles for large organizations. What they are is absolutely fantastic practitioners.
Interesting. So is this a problem that you think is stems from the unification of insurance and profession and financial planning, perhaps, that maybe the two of them are sort of, the CII is trying to do something that meets both of those professions?
I am told that the Personal Finance Society document wasn't derived from the General Insurance document. That is something that you know, I have raised this previously and was told that. Looking at the documents together, it's hard to understand why or how that hasn't happened, because they're very similar. They start from a very similar point. I do feel that you have a very distinct and separate set of needs and requirements and sort of wants from the financial planning profession that aren't being met by what's available in the draft, at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, the CII has said that its vision is for personal finance and insurance to enjoy parity of esteem with other trusted professions, and its mission is to have more member professionals to serve the public. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought having switched between that email and my other document. There we go. So what are the Do you agree with the CII that there are issues that need to be addressed? You touched on the fact that maybe some of the qualifications might be a little bit outdated. Is it fair to say that that needs to be addressed, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. It's. I think there was a stat from the president of the PFS the other week that 25% of the membership are within 10 years of retirement age. So that's a large bank of people for whom who are currently very important in terms of the qualification framework and who will no doubt have gone through a rigorous set of qualifications. But actually, the focus needs to be on what are the future needs, what are the needs of the profession in 10 years, 15 years and 20 years. And I don't think this is forward looking enough for the financial planning profession to really do it justice. If this is sort of delivering a strategic sort of future vision for the body.
This is something that they do touch on this briefly in the document, I believe. They sort of say the breadth of the current qualifications misses some obvious parts for our profession. So I think they mention AI, data analytics, ESG, risk and employee benefits. Are those sort of things that you're thinking about, or do you think they need to really go further than that?
Yeah, I think the key bit lacking in the qualification framework is actually the skills of financial planning. There is a sort of a truism considered by people who've been doing this for a while, you know, that you go to the CII for their exams for the technical competencies, and you go to alternatives for the actually how to do the job. And none of this proposal addresses that bit, as far as I can see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see how that would be the case. I've, for my sins, sat a couple of the exams, and they are very technical, and they are very much based on sitting in front of a book and learning facts about bear trusts and, oiks.
Absolutely. And the crux of the issue, as I see it, is that a financial planning professional is answerable to their client. It is their client that agrees their fees. It's their client that pays the fees. The general insurance sector, for the most part, is still structured in such a way that the broker, the person who's sitting in front of the client, is answerable to the person paying their bills, which is typically the product provider. And so you have this in sometimes pretty subtle, because I think any good broker would tell you, actually, I very much care about the clients and I have them in mind when I'm working out what the best solution is for them, and I'm not influenced by the fact that that's where the money's coming from, which was very much the argument given by the financial services profession, financial services industry prior to RDR back in 2013. But the issue is that the product of a financial planner is the service that they offer to the clients. And the current set of exams, and in fact, if you look at the technical competencies that are within the professional map as well, the focus on all of those is on a product solution for a problem that somebody presents with, which is very much how the financial planning qualifications the CII offer are currently structured as well. And that really misses the point. And I think that misses the point because the people making the decisions don't understand that often quite subtle difference.
Mm-hmm. I suppose there's not really a soft skills, for example, just to give you an example, there's not really a soft skills course, as far as I'm aware, within the CII portfolio of things that you can learn about, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly, and not even so much soft skills. I mean, I've sat this in the last year, the CFP, which is largely considered to be the international standard for financial planning, and that still involves looking at solutions for clients, but the focus is on the client and not the solution. You know, the focus is on actually mapping out the client's future, the thing we do in the day job, mapping out the client's future, working out if what they've got is enough, and if not, why, and how that might change, and what changes they could make to their lifestyles. You know, not, okay, I've identified that you could be more tax efficient by paying into a pension or something like that. Maybe part of it, but it isn't the focus.
Mm-hmm. one of the setups, one of the ways that the CII sets up this, the reason that they've published this document is that they say that consumers' online experiences raise their expectations over service and address. And so do you feel that they've sort of set up the problem correctly, but then haven't quite managed to get to the solution?
Yeah. And I think it's a fundamental lack of understanding at executive level at the CII, and I think a lack of seeking to understand. So it's a combination. It's not just a misunderstanding, because that can be resolved if you go and seek to resolve that. But I think it's a lack of willingness to understand how the financial planning sector differs. And perhaps that's a not wanting to look at the elephant in the room, which is that they are now, if they weren't before, two very different sectors currently sharing a similar group of professional body.
Mm-hmm. It's the journey that a lot of advisors have been on since RDR has been very much away from talking about products. And in fact, some advisors, you know, they do lifestyle planning, they do they don't really focus around the product at all. So is this too focused around that, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And as I say, I think that stems from a lack of understanding. And that's not to say that finding suitable products isn't important. And in fact, you know, it's how the regulator regulates as well. So it is part of the technical proficiency of a good financial planning individual and a good financial planning firm to be able to do that. But it shouldn't be the focus.
It is a delicate balance, I suppose, isn't it? Because you do want to make sure that people know what they're talking about.
Absolutely.
But on the other hand, you don't want to create automatons that can only talk about portfolios and pensions, basically.
I think a really telling example of this is that I know a couple of people who have been interested in changing careers, and so they've gone and they're in other technical professions often, particularly the couple I'm thinking about, and they've gone and taken the full suite of diploma level exams that would give them the qualification that is approved by the regulator as being someone who can deliver advice, and they then struggle to even get an entry level sort of power planning or sort of trainee advisor role, because they're considered to be overqualified for that, but under experienced to actually be able to place to do the work. And so if the benchmark qualification isn't providing enough to get you in the door, you know, then that strikes me as there being an issue with the qualification structure.
Does this also point more broadly into the CII needs to be having a broader discussion in a way about how you grow advisors, you know, where they come from? Because, you know, time was that your advisor would come via maybe a product provider, Salesforce or something, and then would branch out into being an advisor. But does the CII need to be holding a broader conversation about how you actually grow a financial advisor from school or university or whatever to being a chartered financial planner?
Absolutely. And that's the key. You know, it's about where are the next generation of financial planners coming from? Because you're dead. I mean, the sales forces don't exist anymore for a start. You know, they're all telephone based if they do exist. And, you know, they are providing a sort of a secondary or a tertiary service. There isn't that they're not a key part of the advice process as they once were either, you know, in terms of going and I speak to people the generation above me, and they often started as, you know, they'd be quotes clerks when they'd be running from financial advisors' offices back to the, you know, the insurance company's regional office to put quotes through and that sort of thing. And that just doesn't exist anymore. So, yeah, if we want to be a profession, which I think generally we aspire to be, then we need to look at how the professions that have come before us have sought to grow themselves. And, you know, it involves close working with the universities. There's not nearly enough outreach there. You know, there's a whole section of actually what are we trying to do here. And as I say, it comes from understanding the profession, really.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is going to have any impact on you know, the future of chartered status? I think chartered status is broadly speaking seen as the thing that a financial planner should aspire to. CFP, as you mentioned earlier, is a global thing, but it's still relatively niche in the UK. Do you think that might, despite sort of have some sort of impact on the status of chartered financial planning?
Yeah, I think it needs to have, because I think that at the moment you have the status of chartered financial planner without having ever demonstrated that you undertake financial planning. And that itself is a challenge, and it's hard, a hard challenge to overcome, because plenty of, it's not to say that it's easy to become a chartered financial planner, because it's not. It takes years of you know, doing qualification after qualification, and it's hard wrought and hard earned. So how you deal with the issue of, well, you know, there needs to be some sort of equivalency given to something that doesn't necessarily say what you're doing is financial planning. And that is a tough one. But, you know, for as long as they've had it, the CII have had the monopoly on the term chartered financial planning. And as I understand it from I think picking up from a couple of news articles, that isn't necessarily the case anymore, or might not be the case going forward.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's certainly been some, you know, discussion. I think this, yeah, there's certainly been some discussion about that. I think the there's just as to expand on the statement that the CII has provided. It says the Shaping the Future Together consultation encourages all members and stakeholders to have their say to help shape our strategy and ensure we are fit for the future as a truly modern, relevant, and diverse organisation. We have an engaged membership, and we welcome their involvement across all aspects of the consultation, including a vision for professionalism. Our view is that professionalism is as relevant as ever, and that it is a time to be more vocal about that with our members, stakeholders, and the public. We want to be more visible in the media to educate the public on the value of professional advice, to bring clarity to career opportunities, to raise awareness of the societal good of personal finance and insurance, to promote chartered status and enhance the reputation of our sectors. We are pleased to be receiving consultation responses and encourage everyone to have their say on the proposals before it closes on the 17th of December. And Alistair, I believe you've not relatively recently completed your response, haven't you? All 19 pages of it.
And that's it. So I mean, the structure concerns me a bit. I sat this morning and went through it, and I took a note of every page and the text on every page, and it runs to 19 pages, and I don't know how many thousands of words. It took me 45 minutes to complete. But I think the most worrying thing for me is that the little completion percentage bar never got above 25% until the end. And so when you're 10 pages through, it tells you you're 10% done. And so you're sitting there and just thinking, oh, gosh, this is going to go on forever. And, you know, if you've ever looked at sort of SurveyMonkey or anything like that, they have lots of guidance about how you produce surveys that people will actually complete. And that's one of the key things, make it clear how far through people are. It is not clear. And I'm concerned that, you know, their dropout rate is going to be significant as a result.
Mm. Well, they are, the CII, as it says they are receiving consultation responses, and it encourages members and stakeholders to use the online consultation form to share their thoughts about the CII's proposals, the challenges they face, their current relationships with the CII, and how they feel the professional body can best meet their needs in the years to come. And the deadline is the 17th of December. Great. Well, thanks so much for that, Alistair. I thought that was an interesting conversation. And thank you very much for listening. And tune in again next week for the next edition of the FT Advisor podcast.
Thank you. Thanks, Amy.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.